Why base in Austin? What makes Austin appealing to you?
I think Austin was the closest thing we could get to kind of the things that are great about California while still staying.
First time I've heard that.
We're the blueberry in the bowl of tomato soup is what people say.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Lot 3649 in Heritage Auctions August 2022 signature event is a 1909S VDB Cent, graded MS67, red by PCGS.
I don't expect you to understand any of what that person just said. I didn't either, but she's describing a penny, like an American copper penny.
The 1909S VDB Cent ranks among the 100 greatest U.S. coins, and the piece is one of the finest out there. Make sure to place your bid accordingly.
The winning bid for the coin at the Heritage Auction House was $117,000. Coins are just one of hundreds of categories of alternative investments. Sports memorabilia is another. Wine, jewels.
It's a perfect diamond, but it's a round, polished one that is ready to be put in a ring if it wasn't for investment purposes.
Donna Auslander is describing a diamond her company Luxus is selling to investors. So fancy, it has its own name, Orion. Now, diamonds with their own names are probably more than most of us can afford, so Luxus is offering fractional ownership.
It's absolutely an inflation hedge. I think that people really looked at alternative investments in a very different way, starting from the last 5 years or so. They've been investing in real estate, obviously precious metals. Gold has been around since 17th century Venice. But in the last 10 years, we saw palladium, platinum, rhodium come up.
The idea caught the attention of this week's guest, Chris Shunk of ATX Venture Partners.
And there's really been just a staggering run of demand for anything from timber to shipping containers, art, wine, fractional racehorses. I mean, you name it. I think people are looking for a generally accepted global store of value that's finite in supply. You know, so that not only can preserve your wealth, but hopefully get some capital appreciation or even some yield off of it.
What got you interested in this? Did Luxus pitch you or did you come hunting for them?
So they pitched us, but we did kind of hunt for them. We are longstanding alternative assets investors. So, you know, one of my hats is a technology venture capitalist, right? So I'm out there looking for technology that's, you know, disrupting and creating new markets, or amplifying old legacy markets that just were not technology forward. But I'm a collector of gems, fossils, minerals. I collect numismatics, which is old money. Do that with my son. Several of my LPs and kind of family office friends are also avid collectors of luxury assets. And it absolutely is a store of value.
I'm interested in your collection of old money. Tell me about something in your collection that you particularly like.
Oh, I've got a lot of the Texas currencies from when we were a country, just because we're headquartered here in Austin. Have a lot of stuff from different times in the war. So if you think about it, and especially you being on the sort of press side, we're all students of history, and money was the original mass media. you know, just like painting the walls in chapels and churches were a way to communicate with the masses. Whatever was on the currency in the pocket of your citizens was what you as a country, as a leader, you know, of that country were trying to communicate. So in there is just a journey down memory lane of history and what you were trying to communicate, what was happening in that country or that nation at that time, what challenges and opportunities, what was the zeitgeist at hand, because it was the original billboard, right? It was a billboard in your pocket disseminated through all the citizens of your society and reflection to counterparties that you would trade with who are not citizens of yours as for what your country and society stood for. So I really like it from a history perspective, and it's held up very well from an investment as well. You know, I've made a decent amount of money kind of trading up into these things. And it's a great conversation with my sons and a fun hobby to have together.
When we talk about alternative investments, these are different than buying stocks or bonds, and they're protected differently, right? I mean, the investor needs to understand that this is different than buying a share of Apple on the stock market.
That's right. I think that is where the opportunity is too, is bridging that gap. So what can serve you, what serves the investor about the status quo? You know, broader based market distribution, analysts covering it, the underlying security, better flow of information. And if you look at the alternative assets, a lot of times there's less liquidity. They're more opaque about the timely access to information. And so in that, you should be paid for that risk, right? There's always this equilibrium where things change hands and you're trying to either increase the amount of liquidity or increase the amount of information and the timeliness of that information to get to a parity to where you can grow the market and more easily transact. And so I think that that's what's happening is you have these assets that are more niche. They're alternative assets. They're less liquid. But through embedded fintech and financial structuring, those are becoming in vogue and they're being more commoditized or in early stages of commoditization to kind of grow that market and make them more sellable to a larger base.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You have a surprisingly broad portfolio. Protopia AI uses machine learning to glean insights out of data. Homepoint is in the mortgage business. Canteen sells vodka. Slingshot Aerospace makes satellites. So you got mortgages, cocktails, rockets. Are you comfortable in all of those spaces?
Well, it's interesting. They don't, on the surface, they might seem very disparate. What's usually behind them is some intersecting theme. So because we know what's going on the retail shelf and do a lot of inventory management, consumer packaged goods stuff as angel investors and across my fund. I mean, I've been a longstanding consumer packaged good and e-commerce investor. That gives you a lens to look at inventory management. So one of our big investments is a company called Pensa Systems. You might see them on the website as well. They are what's happening real time on a retail shelf, in a convenience store, in a warehouse, in a grocery store. But when those founders were pitching that deep technology to us, we knew the problem of empty shelves and what it meant and the challenges there because we had invested in physical products on retail shelves and had to deal with this. And one of our investors owns a large chain of grocery stores. And so we were able to triangulate on this problem very acutely and then make that investment. And then on some of the other stuff, we're generally following founders that we've already worked with before. So on, Slingshot Aerospace, that's, my third time to work with that same founder. In fact, we had a company that we took public together back when I was a founder. So we're generally, we're not looking for something that we don't understand and a team we don't know. Ideally, you have both. It's something you know, have a thesis on, have an information experience advantage, and you're not taking people risk. You're already working with a team or investing in a team you've worked with historically. So that's why it might seem a little bit, heterogeneous out there, is that we're in companies that are changing the way things are done with founders we've already worked with that are going to bring it back to one of our kind of core themes, I guess you could say.
You've worked in consumer goods for a long time. What was your favorite investment, or what was your favorite consumer good? They may not be the same thing.
Oh my gosh. Well, there was you may have had this before when the paleo movement was just kind of starting. So that dietary movement, to eat less carbs, more like a caveman, if you will. There was a category that was not determined yet. There was kind of jerky, meat products. And then there were all the granola bars and all the health bars and the snack bars and things like that. And there was a company called Epic, E-P-I-C, that I invested in as a kind of to try and ride the thesis of, hey, this paleo thing is real. CrossFit is real. People are trying to bring down carb intake, but there's no place I can go in the snack aisle and get something besides just jerky. And they ended up selling that business. It was a nice exit, and it defined this whole category of protein-based snackable bars in a world that was generally very carb heavy. So that was a fun one because it was a fun brand. It was very timely, and I would, snowboard, hike, go around and go places, and you start to see, Epic bars, or people see an Epic sticker on your helmet while you're mountain biking, and conversations start. So I think that's the fun thing about consumer facing things, is that you get to talk about it and it creates a conversation, versus if you're investing in, enterprise deep tech, that isn't necessarily a dinner table conversation, right?
Right. And your mom and dad also understand what it is you just invested in. You can pull it out of your pocket. Which one of your investments do you think is best positioned in these economically uncertain times?
We have a couple that are in supply chain visibility. So I would tell you right now that no one cared about supply chain. It wasn't a buzzword. I mean, you remember, you've been talking to smart people and a thought leader for a long time here. No one cared about that. And I think, us being in the mid-continent, here in Texas, right? We're not in San Francisco. We're not in New York. You have to make things and move them, right? It's a big asset intensive, large piece of land with, huge ports and energy and just hard assets everywhere. And so for us, the making and moving of things is what we do. So investing in technology that better helps you make and move things was just pure logic. And so we've been investing in that for over a decade. And then COVID happened. And then geopolitical anti-China stuff happened. And that we are riding this wave of nearshoring, reshoring, supply chain visibility very hard. And I think that is not slowing down. For all the buzz that's been had over the past 3 years, I would tell you that we're less than 10% penetrated towards a self-actualized and efficient supply chain. So there's still a lot of room to run there.
You're a small firm. You recently hired Jeff Thompson. He's a former Army officer. You're a former Army sergeant. Was his experience a factor in your hiring decision?
Absolutely. We hire folks that have been operators. So if you look across our whole company, one thing that is interesting as a firm is generally venture capital is a small asset class. And it's a drop in the bucket of the global things that one can invest in, right? We're a subset of private equity, which is a subset of alts or illiquids, right? Which is a subset of what's available. And there, we're overweight, the whole industry is overweight, smart people who can financially engineer and are very fluent transactionally, right? Like that's table stakes. You know, being in Mensa and being able to craft transaction and model things out, be a financial investor, that's table stakes. What's the irony is that early stage, so in the, you know, standing up companies, getting to that first couple million of revenue, that's not a spectator hands-on sport. You know, you can't just hand a bunch of hedge fund managers, some startup companies and cross your fingers, right? You need to know how to operate. And so our thesis was, is that if you're going to help launch companies with founders, being a founder gives you an edge. Just like if you're going to play a sport and coach a sport, it's better to have played a sport, right? So I'll kind of maybe have to edit some of this out. But if you think about it, what coach out there has ever been successful in any athletics that didn't play the underlying sport? Yet most venture capitalists have never actually built a company. They're financial investors. So there's irony in that. So when we look to build our firm, we look for people that had all the financial acumen and chops. You know, we're in, you know, hyper-intelligent Team Mensa individuals, but they had actually built teams and launched products. They were technical. They could code and manage the numbers. And so finding people that are operators who are also financial investors has been something we've been on a quest to do. And I believe that the military and the ability to be a team player and get things done as a team, especially in a world where we're trying to invest in technology, often at the demise of people that were there previously, right? Like automation is literally that.
Yes.
And so the irony is that at the end of the day, it all lands back on humans. For as much deep AI as we're doing, and we're definitely in that space pretty heavily with some great investments, you know, people still need to get things done. They need to work together. And for all the polarization and this versus that out there, you know, it's nice to have people that know how to work with folks that think differently than they are, look differently than they do, might fly a different flag, you know, are heterogeneous. And the military is a great proving ground to find individuals who innately know how to get things done with other people.
Speaking of, differences, we'll call it rivalries. I'm in California. You're at ATX, which is short for Austin. Why base in Austin? What makes Austin appealing to you?
I think Austin was the closest thing we could get to kind of the things that are great about California while still staying.
So, not the first time I've heard that.
We're the blueberry in the bowl of tomato soup is what people say, right? So, and I think that just resonates with what's happening here. I mean, if you look at it, it's the state capital, right? So there's the ability to kind of help craft with some idea legislation. It's also a big university town. And so with that university college dynamic comes asking why, being a little bit curious and possibly even recalcitrant, right? And so those are beautiful things. And that's a lot of what made the Bay Area great back in the day, is it was this haven for people that were willing to break eggs to make an omelet and think differently and be progressive, right? So it has those elements, but it's all wrapped in this very pro-business, you know, light government, tax-friendly sort of umbrella that makes it a very interesting place to be right now to launch technology companies and be an investor. So I think we're not the only ones here doing this, but we were ahead of sort of the influx. And it's nice to be part of the incumbent regime that's seen the past, knows the present, understands the future a little bit better as a local. So, yeah.
And then circling back to Luxus, this company, what do you hope for this company? Were we to meet back here in a year, 2 years, where would you expect it to be?
So across multiple assets, so you can't boil the ocean. So there, Luxus is starting with gems and jewelry, you know, truly collectible museum quality stuff, very, very rare, absolutely finite in supply and high in demand. So you think about something that was worn by Marie Antoinette, or was this ruby once upon a time in King Solomon's, you know, actual vault. Like these are the stories and the conversation and frankly, the community that come with the asset class that you don't get in a laddered bond fund or discussing your timber portfolio, right? Is because it's this intersection of luxury, ownership, collectibles, fashion, and an underlying asset class, it has things above and beyond just being an investment. There's a community and a conversation around it that make it dynamic and more attractive than not having those attributes. And so if we came back here in a year, I think Luxus, and hence the name Luxus, is to be the thought leader and the market maker for these very rare, highly curated groups of investor collectors across the whole luxury category, which is actually on fire. For as much demise is happening in the macro world right now, if you look at art sales, racehorses, yachts, the rich are absolutely getting richer, and the amount of money at the 1% of the 1%, the velocity and the increase in pricing around these luxury assets is off the charts.
Chris Schonk of ATX Venture Partners. Next week on Sand Hill Road.
I think the ethos of Californians has always been unique and distinct, and the worldly view from people in California just always amazes me how educated and knowledgeable people are.
Sand Hill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.